This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try.
Gaylor, welcome to Free Thought Radio. Whether you call yourself an atheist, an infidel, an agnostic, a polytheist, this is Rational Radio, radio for the irreverent rest of us.
And I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist of the airwaves. Did you say polytheist?
Yeah, that was a new one for me too. I looked it up. It means you disbelieve in many gods or the many gods that have been made up until now through history.
A polytheist. What about a panatheist, if you just disbelieve in all gods? Maybe we should just start making new labels for our listeners and for our members. This is Free Thought Radio, and this show originates on May the 14th, 2011. We broadcast in Madison, Wisconsin. We also broadcast in Atlanta, in Grand Rapids, Michigan, in Monterey, and New York City, if you're a very early riser there on Sunday morning at 5 o'clock. And, of course, we podcast all over the world.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, which is a 501c3 educational charity working to promote the separation between religion and government, to protect that wall of separation between church and state, and to educate the public about non-theists. And we are the largest explicitly atheist-agnostic organization in the country, in North America, actually, with 16,500 members.
And one of our members, who was a member from the very beginning, right after the group was founded in 1976, actually, we have some sad news to report, the death of Paul J. Gaylor. And we called him Jody, and he was Annie Laurie's dad. He was 84 years old. He was married for 61 years to Ann Nichol Gaylor, who was the principal founder of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and she is the president emerita. Jody was the principal volunteer of the Freedom From Religion Foundation for at least the first two decades. He was originally on the governing board, was still a member of the board of directors at large, and he was one of the six plaintiffs in the Freedom From Religion Foundation's ongoing national lawsuit against the National Day of Prayer. He died a week ago Thursday, May the 5th, on the National Day of Prayer, and we think he would have smiled about that because it shows that the National Day of Prayer certainly does not work. So our condolences to Anne.
He gave important testimony in the National Day of Prayer case about the hypocrisy of prayer, being raised in the Christian Church Disciples of Christ, where he never got over being dunked, you know, in a pool, a baptismal pool, at the age of 12, the indignity of it, and the hypocrisy of the deacons in his church in Springfield, Missouri. He grew up in the 30s, the racism of that church.
And what was his line about fool catcher?
He used to say that, "I don't believe in," if someone would press him about whether he believed in God or not, to get them to shut up, he would say, "No, but I believe in the fool catcher." So he died 6 months after a diagnosis of brain cancer, and there needs to be reform in the state of Wisconsin so that we adopt the same death with dignity measures as Oregon and Washington, so that when someone who has a terminal illness is ready to go, they can, if they wish, choose when to go.
And not suffer unduly. And that is not a sin. Well, Paul Joseph, or Jody as we call him, he really liked jokes. He always wanted me to tell jokes. And so here's a joke in his honor. And in fact, it's a joke suggested by Ann Gaylor for this show. There was a priest and a rabbi and a televangelist who were going on a fishing trip off the coast of Florida. And a huge storm blew up and blew the boat out. And this huge storm and the boat was crashed against this little tiny rock island out there, like a mile away from shore. They scrambled to the rock. Night was coming. And they realized, oh, we're not going to survive the night here unless one of us tries to swim to shore, but there's sharks out there. But the televangelist said, I'm the strongest, and God is on my side. I will swim to shore. So he jumped into the water, and he swam, and all these sharks came around him and circled around him. But then they backed off, and they formed these two lines on both sides, and they escorted him all the way to the shore. And the priest said, thank God, it's a miracle. And the rabbi said, no, it's not a miracle. It's professional courtesy. We have two guests on today's show, one of whom will be joining us in a second. But before we bring on Benjamin Birchall, who is another reformed non-sinner, someone who, like me, used to be a minister and is now a non-believer, and he co-founded the group called Non-Believers, Black Non-Believers of Atlanta, we just want to play one quick news story out of Detroit about the National Day of Prayer. Our staff attorney, Rebecca Markert, has dealt with several ongoing violations of state church separation by the mayor in this city. Listen to this TV coverage to catch what the mayor in Warren, Michigan, was up to on the National Day of Prayer.
In songs of praise, the National Day of Prayer was marked at a ceremony in front of Warren City Hall. Prayers from religious leaders of many denominations were featured at the ceremony.
We cry to you, have mercy on us.
Warren Mayor James Fouts got some heat from critics who argued the event violated church-state separation.
And we want to publicly thank Mayor James Fouts for his courage in the face of difficult decisions.
The crowd enjoyed the service on a rare, warm, sunny day this spring.
I think it's great that we can express our feelings and enjoy the sun at the same time.
Do you see any church-state issues with having prayer in a public square?
None whatsoever.
Members of the Freedom From Religion Foundation object to prayers in the public square, and particularly to the fact that notices were sent out about the event with City of Warren water bills.
I see nothing wrong with that. We sponsor a number of different events, and this is just a notice letting people know they can attend if they want to.
Is it fair to say it's more a civic than a religious event?
It is a tradition.
National Prayer Day was established by Congress and signed into law by President Truman in 1952. It thrives in Warren.
I thought it was a wonderful event. It was nice to see all the different cultures, all the different religions all coming together for one cause, which is to pray to God for our country.
In Warren, Bill Gallagher, Fox 2 News.
So you did catch that the mayor of Warren, Michigan, invited townspeople via their water bill.
Is that would that
to the National Day of Prayer event? I think that's quite intimidating.
Would that be holy water, Bill?
And it, yeah, and it seemed that the city was appearing to sponsor this event, and we've complained and continue to complain.
I'm Dan Barker here with Annie Laurie Gaylor, and this is Free Thought Radio. Coming up, we'll be talking with Benjamin Birchall on the phone, a former minister who is the co-founder of Black Nonbelievers of Atlanta. So stay tuned.
Find out more about Free Thought Radio and the Freedom From Religion Foundation at FFRF.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. This is Free Thought Radio. This is Free Thought Radio with your hosts, Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor.
Welcome back to Free Thought Radio. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker. We are co-presidents of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Join us at FFRF.org. Create your own out-of-the-closet message. It looks just like a real billboard at FFRF.org/out. And our guest today that we're welcoming in a minute has done that,
and
it's
billboard.
Very cool, and it's a chance to lend your voice to a growing movement.
And we have with us on the phone today from Atlanta, Benjamin Birchall. I call him Ben Birchall. We'll ask him what he prefers. He is a former preacher like me. He is now a co-founder of Black Nonbelievers of Atlanta. And Ben will be speaking at the Freedom From Religion Foundation's Southern Free Thought Hall over the Independence Weekend, July 1 through 3. at the Alabama Freethought Association's annual July 4th event. That's out near Talladega, which isn't too far from Atlanta. I think it's a couple-hour drive. That's our chapter, and the Freedom From Religion Foundation is co-sponsoring this year's events. We'll have many interesting speakers. Steve Benson and I are going to team up for another Tunes and Tunes performance. Jim McCollum, the famous state church litigant from the McCollum case, Southern FFRF chapter activist, and our guest today, Benjamin Birchall. So welcome to Free Thought Radio, Ben.
Hello, Dan. Hello, Laurie.
It's Annie Laurie. Don't just call
Annie
her Laurie.
Laurie.
Call her
Annie. I am so sorry.
That's all right. And then do we call you Benjamin or Ben?
Ben is just fine.
Okay.
Ben. Now, Ben is the Hebrew word for son, I guess. So.
Now, you started off as a child preacher, we understand, at age 12 with the Seventh-day Adventist Church. How did that happen?
I was about 11 years old when this little old lady came knocking door-to-door down our little street in Philadelphia. And it was hot during the summer times, and my mother let her in to give her something to drink. And lo and behold, she was a Seventh-day Adventist woman going door-to-door, spreading the good news of the gospel according to the Seventh-day Adventist Church. And because my mother, who was already a Christian, wanted to study the Bible more, she set up some Bible studies with the lady. And being an inquisitive child coming from a somewhat broken home and needing some structure in my life, the religion certainly provided lots of structure. They seemed to have all the answers, and was baptized that year into the church, and almost immediately began speaking and preaching at the church.
And did you actually must have believed all that stuff then, not just going through the motions?
I did. I was a very sincere believer. Again, they seem to have all the answers. One of the things about religions like Adventism, which are highly, they take the Bible very literally. So every question that you have, they say they have the answer. And if you don't understand the answer, it's not because there's something wrong with the answer. It's because there's something wrong with our understanding. Hmm. God's understanding is greater than our own. So we are supposed to simply accept what the Bible says and the church's interpretation of the Bible.
So you, I understand you became a youth elder, quote unquote, kind of like the Mormons have their elders who are actually teenage boys, at 17 in the New Life Seventh-day Adventist Church in Philadelphia. And then you got involved in prison ministry?
Yes, I actually started prison ministry many years before becoming a youth elder. I think I got started in prison ministry about 14 at the Youth Study Center, which is a prison for minors.
I didn't start till I was 15, so you had a big head start on me with your preaching years.
But a whole year, yeah.
I know that whole feeling of being called by God and the world's going to end. And, you know, the Adventists, besides preaching that, of course, the Sabbath is on Saturday, unlike most Christians who think it's on Sunday, I read some of the literature, and they even said that the Catholic Church is the Antichrist. The mark of the beast is worshiping on Sunday. Did you used to preach stuff like that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And of course, now I look back and, you know, I can see the insanity of it all. But the Seventh-day Adventists aren't the only ones that believe that. The Mormons also believe that as well, in terms of the Catholic Church being the Antichrist. But they don't believe that Sunday is the mark of the beast like the Adventists do.
So what happened? Something must have happened around your early 20s then, and you changed your mind. You saw the light. What happened?
Yeah, well, it's I would trace my exit of from the Seventh-day Adventist Church back to when I was about 18, 19, going to St. Joseph's University. And I took a course on the Bible. And this Jesuit priest who was teaching the course asked us the question, if the Bible was the literal word of God, and then proceeded to show us the contradictions in the resurrection story. In the four Gospels, and I was not only amazed that this priest was doing this, I was very angry because I couldn't understand why a Christian would be trying to point out contradictions in the Bible. But I think the Catholic Church actually has a more honest stance on the Bible. They don't view the Bible as their only source of truth, but it's the Bible and church tradition. Whereas my own church, the Seventh-day Adventist Church, said it's the Bible and the Bible alone. And I had just never seen those contradictions in the Scripture before. So that really rattled my faith, but it wasn't until I was about 22 that I began to ask the question, how could God be everywhere? Because, you know, we believe that God is omnipresent. And the only answer I could think of is if God is everywhere, that means that God must be everything. And if God is everything, then why call it God? So at that point, the remaining bits of my faith had completely broken down. I'd already reached a point where I no longer viewed the Seventh-day Adventist Church as the true Church of the Latter Day, and my faith in the Scripture as the literal Word of God had already been shaken, and now my faith in the doctrine of God that I had been accepting began to break down.
Now, I understand that you were completely shunned by the people that you had brought into that church. What did that entail?
Oh, well, when I left the church, I sort of did it cold turkey without explanation to anyone because I already knew what would happen. I knew that people that left the church, there was always an effort to get them to come back. And although Adventists don't blackball you, they don't tell family members that you can't you know, have a relationship with the apostate member, you still very much get that from people. I think somehow people believe that your non-belief is somehow infectious.
Yeah.
And is going to infect them. So
That's right.
My very best friend, Abraham and his family, who were actually from India, they came from a part of India in Kerala, in the southern, one of the southern states that is a majority Christian. So when I brought to them the message of the Adventist Church, it made sense to them. When I left the church, I think they saw it as, you know, a big betrayal, because by accepting Adventism, they were in some ways rejecting their own culture. So to have the person that brought them into the church to reject that faith that they that I inspired in them, and that was quite traumatic for them.
So we only have about a minute left here, Ben. And what you're talking about, the rejection of a culture, you're also a co-founder of the Black Nonbelievers of Atlanta. And don't a lot of blacks feel that way, too, that if a black becomes a nonbeliever, they're betraying their whole culture as well? Tell us about your group in Atlanta.
Absolutely. Well, we started the myself and another person, Mandisa, started the group when we had gone to another group in Decatur and had encountered some prejudice there, unfortunately. Freethinkers often think that just because they're freethinkers, they have left behind all the baggage that's in the rest of society, including racial baggage, and it's not really true. So we decided that, you know, there needed to be a black freethinkers group, because even in all the groups that you go to in black areas, they're still majority white.
So we we're out of time. We are talking with Benjamin Burchill. We come and hear him speak. We'll hear his whole story at the Lake Hypatia July 4th event, which is actually July 1st, 2nd, 3rd. You can go to fffrf.org and look under Events and Outreach to get all the details about this annual event.
So we'll see you in
we're looking forward to meeting
in
you
in Alabama, Ben.
And
I'll see you there.
Yeah, and is there a website quickly for Black Nonbelievers of Atlanta?
It's blacknonbelievers.org.
Thank you so much. I'm Annie Laura Geller with Dan Barker. We'll be right back to talk to Vic Losick.
Hi, I'm Emily Hines, and I'm on Free Thought Radio.
Hello, this is Janine Garofalo. Are you tired of right-wing politicians who desperately want to impose their religious beliefs on the rest of us? I know I am. That's why I'm asking you to support the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Join the fight and call the Freedom From Religion Foundation toll-free at 1-800-335-4021. That's 1-800-335-4021. Or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation website at ffrf.org. That's www.ffrf.org. Proud to be an atheist, Janine Garofalo.
Ask for a sample issue of Free Thought today and find out more about the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor here with Dan Barker.
In God We Teach. That's the name of a new film. In fact, Annie Laurie and I, we are told, were the first to be able to preview the film, and it's just now out as a documentary, a film made by Vic Losik, whom we have on the phone with us today from New York City. Vic used to be a cameraman for the BBC in New York City. He worked with CBS. He shot many of the segments for 60 Minutes. He produced a piece with Mike Wallace as the correspondent. He shot several long-form documentaries, two American Masters for PBS, Ella Fitzgerald, Something to Live For, and Clint Eastwood, Out of the Shadows. He produced a feature documentary, Pie in the Sky, and a one-hour show for Scorsese's blues series called Piano Blues, directed by Clint Eastwood. He's produced and worked with producer and director Mira Bank on another independent feature documentary called Last Dance. And Last Dance has received rave reviews across the country, including from the New York Times. It was named by the Academy of Arts and Sciences as one of the best documentaries of 2002 and 2003. His newest film is In God We Teach, and it's about the state church controversy in New Jersey with Matthew LeClaire, whom we've had on our show.
He was one of our student awardees.
That's right. And this new documentary is all about that whole issue in Kearny, I think that's how you pronounce it, Kearny, New Jersey. So welcome to Free Thought Radio, Vic.
Glad to be here.
We saw the show, and of course we know the story, but when we watched the documentary, the film, it just added so much dimension, so much depth into the story. And so how did you come to make a film like this?
Well, as a documentary filmmaker, which is all I've done all my career, I was always looking for a good story. And many people, I saw it in the New York Times, and I contacted Matthew and met with him and his family. In fact, the first time I met them, we discussed the recordings that Matthew had made, and I said, you know, the teacher, David Paskevich, he's obviously crossed the line. I really don't think there's much of a story here, at which point Matthew's father, who's a lawyer, showed me a letter that David had just written for the local newspaper, and it was a defense of what he had said, and he cited letters from the founding fathers, and I thought, wow, I thought I had a sort of typical understanding of the separation of church and state.
Well, can you refresh the issue for us? I mean, what happened originally? What happened in the
conference? Well, Matthew had recorded. What he did was he had this teacher, David Paskevich, who was an advanced placement junior American history course, and Matthew secretly recorded the teacher over the course of several days, and in it the teacher said, among other things, if you don't believe in Jesus, you belong in hell. That's kind of the famous quote. And then what actually Matthew and his family did was they contacted the school. There was a back and forth through letters for a month or two. There was a meeting with Matthew and the principal and the high school teacher and his department head. And then the LeClaires wanted wanted to make certain corrections to the curriculum in that, and the school ignored them for a month. Then they went to the press. It was written up in a local paper. Then the Times got a hold of it. Then it took off.
Now, before we go into more detail about it, we do have your trailer for In God We Teach, at least one of the trailers. Why don't we listen to that?
It all started when Matthew LeClaire's teacher began preaching about God in class.
He did everything in his power to make sure that you could go to heaven. You reject that. You belong in heaven.
5 months ago, my former history teacher started preaching in class. I knew this was a violation, so I recorded him.
Do you think it's appropriate as it's related to the subject matter and if it's in response to the student's question?
To record the class, I'd use this.
I was unaware that any of this was going on.
I've been recording the class.
I do feel betrayed.
I was hurt more than anything else.
The LeClaires filed a notice of claim, which is a necessary first step to their bringing a lawsuit against the school board.
My career could be stymied.
I was pretty much the loser. The loser.
There's about 2,000 people that go to that school, and he was against practically every single one of them, teachers included.
What we didn't say in that report is he's actually had death threats.
This is the very first interview that I've given.
He was this, you know, good-looking teacher. He was a crew coach.
I'm a Christian first and foremost.
I don't think it's close. I think the mission to evangelize is what it's about for him.
This is why we need to evangelize.
Mr. LeClaire says he was preaching in school. Mr. LeClaire wants to hear preaching. We'll bring in a tape of Billy Sunday and we'll hear, show him here preaching.
So it's the only town in America where you would find that people really care about religion.
This community is 89% Christian.
There are no Jews among the students.
He was giving his opinion. He was asked his opinion. He said it was his opinion.
Let me give you a clue, guys. If there's nothing, it can't explode. You know, I kind of believe in the Big Bang. I think it happened like this. God spoke and bang! It happened.
Just miles away from New York City, residents decided to take the side of religion as opposed to the state.
God bless all of us. We all need help. We're all sinners, okay? Thank you. Thank you very much. Let me ask you a question. Would Jesus do what you're doing now? Would Jesus boo me? I don't think so.
Okay, well, that's pretty exciting stuff. And, you know, we've met Matthew, and, you know, he's a very nice young man. And it was kind of touching because he was telling you, I was the loser in middle school. You know, he was the geek. He was the smart kid. But very good manners and smart. And he knew the law was being broken. So at what point did you decide you had a documentary?
Well, when I read the letter that David wrote to the local newspaper, David Paskevich, I'm sorry, the teacher, that here was a history teacher defending his position. So I thought, well, maybe there's just something I don't understand about the separation of church and state. So, and I did not want to do a polemic. I really didn't want to preach to the choir, excuse the expression. I wanted to, you know, examine all the arguments that Paskevich had put up. So, it took me several months to convince Mr. Paskevich, and he agreed. And the key was, I said, look, I'll go right down the middle, and I'll present all your arguments as best possible. And he agreed to that. The film is the only interview he's ever done. I mean, he was being lambasted in the New York Times quite often on CNN, as you just heard, and he held his silence, which I think he looks back now as a mistake.
Well, I noticed that he's comparing himself to Jesus. Oh, Jesus was silent when he was being crucified. Yeah. It was a little overblown there, but...
But he did his case. You did let him talk, and he made, you know, his strongest case possible, I think that's what lured him into the interview then.
Yeah, I mean, I try to use this as an exercise in civil discourse before civil discourse became popular. And I happen to think it's the only sort of interesting way to go. But my difficulty with the film was that it sort of goes all over the place. It started out as a character-driven story and then kind of evolved into included issue-driven.
And community too. You describe that whole Scottish, Irish, Italian, whatever community, the belief in that, what those people were feeling.
Yes, in many ways, I treated Carney as kind of the third character in the film, because even though you can see Manhattan from downtown Carney, it's in many ways just like lots of small towns across the country.
And Carney is spelled, for the edification of listeners who might not know, might not be from that area, it's K-E-A-R-N-E-Y, but it's pronounced Carney.
Yes, like a carnival, exactly. Uh-huh. So one of my difficult things was just trying to rein in everything and stick with the specifics of David and Matthew. And then when David's arguments got on a more generalized way, then I brought in actually all those sort of professionals, Dershowitz, Neil deGrasse Tyson, all those people all had some relationship with Matthew.
Well, Matthew, yeah, it was Neil deGrasse Tyson was, what happened there? Was he giving him an award or was he just recognizing him at a public event?
There was a weekend called the Center for Inquiry, and they gave Matthew an award that weekend, and all the heavies were there.
Dawkins was there,
Neil deGrasse Tyson, Dershowitz.
Because Tyson had criticized that teacher publicly.
Yes, in the Times.
And good for him, and it was a great letter.
It was pretty powerful. It's the one that I think kind of stung David. However, David takes great pleasure in the fact of when I have Tyson on the Colbert Show describing the Big Bang, then it cuts to David saying, that's incredible. That's hard to believe. So there are certain things. That's probably the best point that David enjoys in the film.
Well, now we're going to end. We're running out of the segment before the end of the show. We thought we would switch gears a little bit since we're talking about religion in the schools. We know that Matthew did not like saying a religious pledge of allegiance. And one of our members just sent us, what is it, Dan?
Tex Ritter, before the 1950s Pledge of Allegiance was changed, he was honoring the Pledge of Allegiance. So this is somewhat appropriate because this is what I used to say when kindergarten in the public schools.
The Pledge of Allegiance to the flag is a pledge to the ideals of our forefathers, the men who fought and died in the building of this great nation. It is a pledge to fulfill your duties and obligations as a citizen of the United States and to uphold the principles of our Constitution. Last but not least, it is a pledge to maintain the four great freedoms cherished by all Americans: freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom from want, and freedom from fear. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
A secular pledge of allegiance by country musician Tex Ritter seems very appropriate when we're talking about the case of Matthew LeClaire in Kearney, New Jersey. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker. We will be right back to talk with filmmaker Vic Losek about the making of this film and why it's important.
In God We Teach.
Ask for a sample issue of Free Thought today and find out more about the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. This is Free Thought Radio. The things that you're liable to read in the Bible, it ain't necessarily so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor here with Dan Barker.
And we're talking with the producer, director, Vic Losek from New York City. He's just come out with a brand new movie called In God We Teach, about state church separation. But Vic, first, you told me on the phone something. We've been talking about that new Smash Broadway musical, The Book of Mormon, which we got to see about a month ago. And you were involved, you filmed it or something? You showed it for fundraising, right?
I was just hired as a cameraman. I was very lucky. In the fall, they were raising money, and at the Juilliard School, they had two performances, full dress with music and all that.
Really?
And there were a bunch of rich people there and famous people there, and I filmed it just for the production so they could use it to raise money and also to have some sort of record of the production at that time.
Well, you must have been laughing pretty hard while you were filming.
It was great. I mean, I truly, truly loved it. I was really shocked, and I said, oh, boy, they may have some trouble with this. It's a huge smash,
it
as
is.
We all know.
Yeah, it's amazing, really. And yeah. I guess the cast musical is coming out.
I ordered it online. So yeah. It's coming out May 17th. And your film, at first I thought In God We Teach was going to be kind of Talking Heads documentary, but that's not what it is at all. You've got some real dimension, and you went into the teacher's home, and you went into the private lives. It must have been really fun but hard to produce like that.
Very hard. This stuff is hard. But that's the way I like to do it. I shot over the course of 18 months and just tried to get to know people. As I explained to David and Matthew, you have to sort of get to know you on camera to care about what you do and what you have done. So they were very kind and gave me lots of time. And you need trust and access to people, and they gave me both, and I'm forever grateful.
Now, you were saying during the break, I guess you were coming to a realization about this big battle there is about getting religion into government and this idea that somehow we're a Christian nation. And what conclusion did you come to?
Well, I've always felt that religion is kind of the first salvo of the culture wars. And one of the things I did realize and learn in making this film that there's a lot of misunderstanding and deliberate obfuscation and outright dishonesty when it comes to characterizing this country. There is a big distinction, a difference with a distinction. The United States has always been quantitatively a majority Christian country, but it is not a Christian country. It's a country with a majority of Christian citizens. And that distinction and that difference is glided over and exploited by politicians and clergy and journalists for their own purposes. And I find it kind of shameless and shocking.
Well, it's kind of like pointing out the fact that a majority of Americans are white, but we wouldn't call this a white nation.
Exactly.
And demographics are changing so quickly, both with race and with religion. We're into the low 70s in terms of self-identification as Christian these days. So
about half of the one-third of the Christians are Roman Catholic as well, and the rest are Hindu, Jewish, and of course non-believers. What I found particularly shocking was someone like Reverend Warren at the inauguration spoke to the country. It's the inauguration of the President of the United States, and started talking about Jesus. Didn't even just say God. He said Jesus, which means approximately one out of four Americans were offended or omitted from his talk.
Yeah, Mike Newdow is still trying to sue over that. He's done his last salvo before the Supreme Court, and we're among many of the plaintiffs who were trying to sue over the fact that they stage prayer as part of the inauguration now.
For all Americans, this is our most civic, sacred event of all Americans, I guess we could call that, and yet they're intruding with someone else's religion on it.
Now, do you happen to know what Matthew LeClaire is? He's in school now, right, in college?
He's going to be, it's interesting, he's just finishing his exams, and he's about to be a senior at the new school. He's quite a guy. And David is continued teaching. He was reprimanded according to law, and he continues to teach
now
at Kearney.
Something about the documentary that really shocked me. I thought originally when I heard the story that the teacher was just sort of a Christian teacher who made this offhand remark that was inappropriate. But you point out that this guy's on a mission. He's a youth pastor. He's a real evangelical who views the schools as his mission field. I mean, it was much more flagrant than I had imagined.
Well, that's the complete misunderstanding of the first part of the First Amendment, which is the Establishment Clause, and you can practice your religion. But the second part is free speech, and a lot of Christian people say, well, what about the teacher's right to preach his religion? And he doesn't realize that the first part trumps the second part. The courts have said that if you're a public school teacher, you're a government actor. You're a player. What's his name? Mr. Whitehead says that, and you cannot talk about your personal beliefs in class. Only when you're on duty. It doesn't mean when you walk out of the school you can say whatever you want.
Right. The religious right cannot see the distinction between their personal beliefs and their personal speech and government speech. And that's when it crosses the line. Like the National Day of Prayer, enacted by Congress, crosses the line. So, we really appreciate that you have put together a documentary that helps to show why this is so divisive when we have religion in the schools. And if people want to get more information about your film, tell us again your website.
InGodWeTeach.com.
And you don't have any, there's no screenings yet because it's so new, But
I'm working on them. Yeah, I'm not allowed to sort of announce them at this point.
So we can't show this DVD you sent us to anybody yet, right?
Please do not.
Okay, so we got to be the first. That was fun.
No, I think my name was all over it even, right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's what my lawyer told me to do that.
Right,
I
so I can't screen it. No, not at all. It was kind of fun.
But if somebody comes to our house, could we show it to them there?
Only after a couple of drinks.
Okay. Well, it's amazing. It was wonderful, and it just put real meat onto the story and emotion and feeling and this teacher who's crying that he's the victim. He's, my job is at stake. I'm the one who's being attacked, when really he is abusing his authority as a public school teacher to intrude his religious views on the students.
Now, Vic, I don't know if you want to make a career of this, but at the Freedom From Religion Foundation, we have two staff attorneys. We take complaints all over the country about government intruding into public schools, and we could tell you some stories.
Well, we'll see. Take it one step at a time.
Well, thank you so much for joining us and for making this documentary, and bon voyage.
Indeed, my pleasure. Thank you very much.
We've been talking with Vic Losick, the producer-director of the new documentary film, In God We Teach, and we want to thank Brian Turani. You can go to ffrf.org/radio to hear this show podcast or to get archives.
Ask for more information at ffrf.org, phone 1-800-335-4021. Don't just ask for information, get involved. Join us. Make yourself a out-of-the-closet statement at ffrf.org/out. It's fun, it's easy, and it's educational, and it makes a difference. And we will be back next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting. Remember, nothing fails like prayer. That's the song.
Nothing fails like prayer.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
I hope someday.